Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we're getting into a conversation around artificial intelligence. It's something that we've touched on a number of different fronts. Whether we're talking about it from a call center point of view, behavior analytics point of view, whether we're talking about solving very complex problems using data analytics and machine learning, whether it's DeepSeek, ChatGPT, Llama, all of these different things that are out there. We have spoken about AI quite at length, since it hits the mainstream in early 2023, post the release of ChatGPT in November 2022. And today, what we're looking at doing is looking at it from an investment banking lens, talking to one of the country's biggest investment bankers to understand how they view the sector, view AI, and possible opportunities around that. To make sense of it all, we are joined by Aaron Varughese, who is the head of technology, media, and telecoms over at Rand Merchant Bank, that is RMB. Aaron, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right, cool. So let's get into AI, right? Mm-hmm. I think we're looking at it specifically AI within the African context, mm-hmm. right? What springs to mind? What are the things that, you contextualize when you say AI use in Africa? Are we talking language translation? Are we talking... Mm-hmm. The chatbots, are we talking, multimodal, concepts that are going to help to, process workflows? Mm-hmm. Like, what are you thinking about, at least as it pertains to the African context?
So the concept of artificial intelligence is quite a broad concept. Mm-hmm. And I think that term has been quite muddied by a lot of marketing hype and a lot of noise in the system. So we need to firstly unpack and understand what is artificial intelligence. And in our world, we simplify it very simply into what is large language models, which is what ChatGPT, Gemini, Grok, and the rest is, and what we know as machine learning or deep learning. The latter is what is actually more in use in Africa and globally. So every time you go on a Google search, every time that you are on Instagram and they serve you an advertisement, every time that you're on a website looking for insurance quote, most of that is actually what we call machine learning, yeah. Where it pattern recognizes and analyzes deep data sets and serves solutions to consumers. Then the former is actually around what we call large language models. And that's what you mentioned earlier around ChatGPT. And the key difference between the two is that one is really an expert at understanding human conversation and being multimodal. So going from text to voice to video even.
Yeah.
And one is more around how we interact as humans with machines, and the other is more around serving data analytics and solutions and answers. So if we separate those two out, it's important to understand what use cases are out there. So I think artificial intelligence as it relates to machine learning has been around in Africa for a very long time. Mm. At the banks, at customers, wherever you have large data sets, whether you're at African Bank, FNB, you've got a lot of analytics around what you as a customer needs in terms of, do we approve this loan? What product are we trying to serve up to you? What analytics, what do we know about you as a person that we can now get better insight to sell you another product or service? We see that at discovery insurers, we see that at the technology companies, et cetera. So that use case has been around for a long time. And also all the services that have been served by the large tech companies, from the Facebooks, the Microsoft example, has already been there. Where we are seeing sort of offshoots and green shoots of large language models in Africa is what we're seeing at, for example, at RMB. Everyone uses Copilot now. Copilot is embedded into your Outlook. Copilot is there with Microsoft Teams.
Yeah, yeah.
So now when I'm having a conversation with you, I can just sit here and type up, give me an overview of your business day, and it'll provide using both data from what RMB has or FirstRand has, plus the web, plus its own model. So that's already been built in. So that Copilot is already proliferating throughout throughout South Africa and Africa. And then you've got a consumer brands like TikTok, Instagram, the rest, where you've got large models that are trying to track data and serve you the best information all the time.
Yeah.
And we as enterprises and businesses are using those channels to serve advertisements to the underlying consumer. So between that, those two sort of use cases, I think that is actually the bulk of what we're using AI for right now in Africa.
Mm.
That might seem a little bit strange to you, like, but surely there's more out there. And that's where we need to double click a bit more. When you hear about all the spend going on to NVIDIA chips, into data centers, into power, into these massive models like DeepSeek, ChatGPT, et cetera, that's all being done by the big tech companies.
Mm.
The big seven tech companies are spending $300 billion a year. You know, Microsoft announced Stargate with OpenAI for $500 billion. You know, you've got Meta announcing. Everyone's announcing large amounts of spend, but that's to develop frontier-leading models and technology. I think as Africans, we are more likely to be the recipients of that technology. All right, and I think you may chuckle at that, but unfortunately, if you look at South Africa's GDP, it's around $410, $420 billion.
Mm.
You've got companies spending that in capex more than what a country produces of 65 million people.
Mm.
We simply cannot compete.
Yeah.
And the answer is, why would we want to compete?
Mm.
Right? We've got our own social spend and sort of issues and infrastructure we need to spend here. So I think what you're seeing right now is you'll have the large technology companies developing this, spending the money, and us plugging into their services, so into a Microsoft, a Meta, into a Google, utilizing their products on a day-to-day basis. That's one element. Or alternatively, we might take scaled-down versions of their models, their cloud services, and apply it to specific African use cases. And we can go through some of those use cases. But I suppose the long diatribe over the actual uses of large language models is probably quite limited still in Africa.
My question, because with everything that you're saying, there's two things you know that spring to mind, right? The first one is there anything wrong with being on the consumption side of the equation, right? Because I think when people look at the wealth transfer that's been you know, created over the last decade, two decades, because of big tech, there's often a thought that South Africa and African economies have missed an entire wave that could have been quite transformational, you know, for a number of African economies if they had fully participated, you know, in technology. And unfortunately, the most that we have, let's, at least on the JSC, is a NASPERS, right? And slash process, you know, type of situation that's there. So I just wonder, is there anything wrong with simply being on the consumption side of the equation? Is there that much value to be derived, you know, from being on the other side of that equation? Especially now, we recently spoke to some data scientists on this platform. They were saying at least the DeepSeek moment in their heads has broken a mental barrier where, as far as they were concerned, they were going to, their part of their business was going to be using existing models, you know, to build, you know, localized solutions. But now the DeepSeek debacle has almost given them, you know, a fresh, you know, almost
perspective
to say, oh, maybe we can actually participate in the development of models, perhaps not to the bleeding edge of what, you know, ChatGPT, Llama, Gemini, Copilot and others are doing, but at least we can do something here. So I'd be keen to get your sense there.
So if you take a step back and you had to be brutally honest, you know, with the fourth industrial revolution, etc., the truth of the matter is that we are very small fish as Africa and as Africa globally. We simply do not have the manufacturing powers, we don't have the human capital, we do not have the capital to spend on building large data centers with tons of NVIDIA H100 chips, etc. So I think even if we wanted to, I think we've got capacity restraints here, and we've got our own social and economic issues that we need to deal with. But if you look globally, other than the US, where are the largest tech companies in the world? You know, in Europe, I can name on my one hand, between a few handful of names in all of Europe. Even in China, you know, there's a couple of names, maybe in Japan. So globally, the US is by far the front runner for tech businesses, whether it's semiconductor design, whether it's data centers, whether it's power solutions, whether it's consumer tech companies, enterprise companies, etc. So you've got an economy that's multiple sizes of ours, that has all the human capital, the head start in technology, the military industrial complex, government support. Everything is pushing forward in that flywheel. So we just need to be quite honest in understand the gap between us and them. That being said, where does that leave us?
Yeah.
I don't think we need to be that. We need to build the next NVIDIA in South Africa. I think the AI moment is going to be another transformational moment, just like mobile was in Africa. Remember, like most of Africa, we skipped landlines. People forget that. We went straight to mobile. We developed M-Pesa in Kenya, etc. And what you're seeing now, and it's another topic we discuss, is once we connect 1.3 billion Africans, we put cheap smartphones in their hands, we bring down data prices to becoming globally low cost. Imagine what that does to the kid in the township. He now has a smartphone where he can watch YouTube, watch all his educational shows. He can teach himself to code on Code Academy.
Yeah.
You know, he can load a store on Shopify, sell e-commerce, all from where he sits, right? So I think the mobile and digital infrastructure sort of epoch that we're in is going to be transformational. So if you link back to AI, what does it mean for us? I think there's nothing wrong with taking the leading edge models, the development, and applying for local use cases and local data sets.
Yeah.
So we can take a DeepSeek, right, and apply it to a very specific use case for education, for healthcare, for agriculture, based on African data, African problem set. Right? Let others go on the bleeding edge and keep innovating, spend all that cost. So if you look at that DeepSeek moment, people took DeepSeek and reduce it down, and then spun up their own versions with equivalent performance to ChatGPT within days and hours.
Yeah.
So to your data scientists, we should be thinking about, let's take those open source models, apply to our data sets and our use cases, and let's leapfrog to the next solution set. That's where I think things are going to be happening. That's one element. The second element is you've got Google, Microsoft, and the rest pumping hundreds of billions of dollars trying to be efficient, putting down the servers, data centers in Africa, providing all the tools for us. So nothing wrong with us going on and using a Copilot. Nothing wrong with us using an AWS. Nothing wrong with us using their technology and their channels to sell our business and services here. So between those two sort of ways of thinking about it, I think we'll get majority of the AI benefit in Africa without spending the money. And don't you think that's a better solution?
Yeah, no, it's an interesting one. And that's why I said, that's why I've sort of wrestled with this one specifically around AI in my head, to say the DeepSeek moment is quite illuminating, you know, to say you almost let an open AI spend all this money, right? Obviously, the guys at DeepSeek, it's not like they just woke up and did this thing. They were creating all of their trading models over the years. So they had capability already in their firm. Not open AI capability, but they had some capability. And then they happened to see an opportunity to say, these guys have gone and trained this thing on the whole internet, right? Let's take that and see if we can, you know, do it in a more efficient way. And, you know, they find themselves at that moment. So I guess in this particular case, the Chinese did what they've done in a number of, you know, different different industries. One of my questions then becomes, because someone who's listening might be like, no, but Aaron is, you know, too on Africa, he's not bullish, he's not giving us the credit, right? What are then the opportunities for people like yourselves, you know, in this space? I think we've often, two of the areas that I follow is venture capital.
Mm-hmm.
We see a lot of money going towards startups of various kinds.
Mm-hmm.
Across the continent, I think fintech continues to be the
yes.
the one that's taking up the most, the most fundraising for the capital. The $5 or $6 billion that come onto the continent, majority goes to, you know, fintech solutions, because to your earlier point, the economic reality mm-hmm. is that you still need to push up financial inclusion and, you know, all of those things. In corporate finance, you know, and also investment banking, your area, mm-hmm. we've seen the likes of yourselves and others investing quite a bit in telecoms infrastructure mm-hmm. and all of this. How do you then view opportunity when it comes to AI? Because at least from everything you're saying, it doesn't sound as if we're in a place where an RMB is not viewing AI in the same way that a JP Morgan in the United States is. It's a completely different yeah. paradigm, because as to your earlier point, the realities are different, right? We are more on the consumption and, use side of that spectrum. Whereas on the other side, they're pumping the $300 billion mm. that you spoke about earlier on.
So look, I think, you know, we as a bank, you know, we always look for what's good for society.
Mm.
And we truly believe in digitization and connectivity for Africa.
Mm.
That's our aim and that's our purpose. We want to connect all 1.3 billion people to the internet, and we want to make sure that they have access to high quality, low cost access. Because we think it's truly transformational. I touched on it earlier. And if you look at what RMB has done on the continent, we have funders to nearly every fiber company in South Africa.
Yeah.
We fund us to all the mobile operators. We fund many of the data center builds on the continent. We are also funders of companies that are invested in the likes of undersea cable, fixed mm-hmm. wireless access. So along the entire value chain, we really believe that there's a lot of growth left. If you look at the stats, out of 1.3 billion Africans, about 500-600 million still don't have access to internet.
Yeah.
Still don't have access to internet. That's a crazy stat in 2025, right? If you look at the undersea cables, we've got 3 or 4 right now, but Equiano and 2Africa has come. But now there's a pipeline of another 5 or 6 that will be coming over the next 5-6 years. So you have undersea cables connecting the continent to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
You have banks like ourselves and companies like the CIVHs of the world, the Terracos of the world, that are putting down both fiber, data center,
yeah.
You've got the MNOs building out towers. You've got companies like Rain providing LTE. So all the way along the value chain, there are people working hard to try filling the gaps,
mm.
right? And you can see it in our country right now, the way data prices have been coming down.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen the launch of smartphones that are becoming cheaper and cheaper.
Yeah.
You've seen the likes of Mkopa in East Africa that does smartphone financing mm-hmm. for very and low-end markets. So we can see the trend. And if you ask us, that's a more immediate need
mm.
than investing in AI. And if you look at what a Microsoft might do, they might borrow money from a JP Morgan to build a data center to get nuclear power, but their economy is far more advanced than where we are.
Mm-hmm.
We think that the social benefit and economic benefits of simply connecting another African to the internet is still high and still a driving need for us. And that need will take another decade or more to go. Right, we're still busy putting fiber into the townships,
mm.
as an example. Right, we have satellite technology like Starlink rolling around Africa. So there's a long runway left for digital infrastructure,
mm.
and us and our competitor banks and peers in the industry have poured billions and billions of rands into it.
Mm.
Just like our bank has poured billions of rands into private power,
mm.
so our power connectivity is not going to work either. Right,
mm.
so I think that's where the current need and focus has been for us as a bank.
Mm.
Right. But then the question is, what does that enable?
Yeah.
So we go fund a data center. We go fund a fiber operator.
Mm.
That data center opens up. Who's their customers? Their customers are Microsoft, Google,
mm.
enterprises. Why are those people putting servers in that data center?
Mm.
To provide better services to the African consumer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So now when you go on Facebook and you click on your photo, it loads immediately because it's sitting in a data center in Joburg, not in Europe.
Mm.
And you'll notice that you try to find a photo on Facebook from 2013, it takes time to load because it has to be fetched from Europe. So even something basic like making sure information is available immediately, it's cheap. We are enabling that through the digital infrastructure investment. And from that, our corporate clients and our large hyperscale clients will then deliver these services to the African consumer as a first starting point. And I think once that's been delivered, you will then see a step change. Because now you'll go, a young kid in the township will go, hang on, I've just taught myself how to code. I can click on my mobile phone, get some AWS cloud space. I can download DeepSeek and I can play around with it myself. Think of all the things that those kids are going to be building over the next 20 years. But you can't get there unless you put that smartphone, that cheap connectivity and the services in his hand. So in R&B, we think of it as a pyramid. The base of the pyramid is digital infrastructure and connectivity. The second layer is actually the services layer. And the very top, you have fintech, e-commerce, and all these large language model sort of solutions, right?
I'm reminded of a report that GSMA put out, I think it was mid last year or in the second half of last year, where they said it was a conversation about, it was about 5G at the time. They were saying that your mobile operators in Africa have done very well in terms of covering broad parts of their populations. Mm-hmm. But there's the other piece of the puzzle that needs to be fixed is simple smartphone penetration. It's one thing to have a 5G ready network, but if your usage of that 5G network is going to be low, then you're almost sitting with this great infrastructure that becomes underutilized. And without putting words in your mouth, it almost sounds as if in economics, we study scarce resources. And it almost sounds to me like you're saying, listen, AI is great. We're going to use it. We're going to take advantage of it. But where Africa is at the moment, there's a connectivity gap that needs to be first addressed before higher order things can truly be invested in.
Also, if you take a step back and last year we did a discussion at AfricaCon where we talked about powering the next set of data centers and growth. And all the panelists, all CEOs of business said their biggest constraint is actually power. So you're going to build a data center in Gaborone. Who's powering 15, 20, 30 megawatts? That's a big number, right? Even in Johannesburg with load shedding, Touchwood, hopefully it is over forever. How do you provide that service with 99.99% uptime if you don't have power? So I think we've got to deal with our basic infrastructure issues first as a continent. And believe me, a lot of the MNOs, a lot of the private companies are all working on the exact problem. So you've got maybe the towers and the data centers, but you don't have a smartphone. So now you've got innovative companies saying, hang on, we will supply that cheap smartphone. Is there good funding models that can supply it? So for example, F&B has, F&B Connect, where it puts cheap data in the hands of our customers. If you want them to be connected. We don't do that because we want to be an MNO, but we want to make sure that our customers have that connectivity at a cheap enough rate that enhances their lives also. So absolutely, I think that's where the focus has been for most people, most funding institutions, most VC capital, etc., has been on solving all the elements around connectivity, power, digital infrastructure, cheap smartphones, etc. I think we're quite excited about that step change that's going to happen for Africa when it does happen. And we are seeing, maybe we can touch on this, we are seeing localized use cases for very advanced AI. And there are some very good examples of that's already been happening. So I don't want to give your viewers a negative view on that, but if you look at where the money is going,
majority is still going to the infrastructure side.
No, I'm completely there with you because, for example, we recently spoke to a team from a small firm in Rivonia. They call themselves Isazi. And these guys are doing amazing work that you'd never even know South Africa has the capability or, you know, to do something like that. I think they've got about over 100 data scientists and they are contributing to, local solutions, but also building solutions for clients in other parts of the world, from being able to do scheduling for airlines and, you know, solving traffic problems, you know, for, you know, the cops and stuff like that. The real world application of, obviously, you know, there's steps in it, you know, the machine learning before we get to the, you know, to the AI. So I do see huge, you know, opportunities locally. I guess in my head, I'm always just thinking to myself, how do you push that at a faster pace? Because it always feels like that's where the real, the real gap is.
Absolutely. So look, maybe we can touch on some actual examples, right? So a very interesting company, I don't know if you've heard of them, is called Lalapa.ai. So what their group of scientists and coders in sitting out.
They're doing language.
Yes. So if you look at what ChatGPT is, ChatGPT has got great translation, but for major languages.
Yeah.
But in training for Japanese or French or English, they've got humans that know the language they're inputting into it to make sure it's refined and doing it correctly. No one's doing that for Africa.
Mm.
No one's saying, is it Xhosa? Is it Zulu? You know, for the large players in America, they're like, why invest in an African language? That's where someone like Lalapa comes in and says, but hang on, we can take those models, we can train them on our local languages. Now that is the true gap in the market, true African use case that's truly useful. And their business models and API into chatbots for text to voice translations, etc. So if there's an F&B chatbot and now I'm typing Isi Zulu, it'll pick it up and translate back to English for the person at the contact center. And that kind of person can speak in English and go back to Zulu. Can also speak in Zulu. Can also take the ChatGPT model and be the interface between them and the consumer. So I can speak to a chatbot in my home language and it'll understand me. Right? Now that is a fantastic use case that's truly African. And that'll hopefully grow in time. But again, it goes back to our earlier conversation of they didn't go out and build the latest, greatest large language models. They've taken what's there and they've applied it to our data sets, our problems. I think that's a key thing that we need to get our heads around is let's take this technology that's out there, let's apply it to our use case and our problem set as Africans, let's apply it to our data set as Africans and provide solutions. And that's where we really are pushing the boundaries. And I think another example is a business which we know quite well called Aerobotics.
Yes.
I'm sure you've heard of them. They use drone technology and machine learning to look at a farmer's crops, identify shortfalls in irrigation, looking at yields, how to improve. They've even got true fruit technology to look at the size of the fruits, how healthy they are, et cetera, et cetera. It's all machine learning, right?
Yeah.
But they've taught their models based on our local data, our sort of farming technology, our farming landscape, right?
Yeah.
They've taken that and now they've exported it now to the US.
Yeah.
So that's a real good example of an African company using artificial intelligence for our problems and then going internationally. And maybe one last one I'll give an example of is a company called Rely Comply.
Yeah.
One of the biggest use cases and problems globally is anti-money laundering. They estimate that 2-3% of global flows is actually money laundering. It's a scary stat. And there's been billions of dollars of fines paid by banks. There's been a lot of cost of compliance by banks trying to prevent anti-money laundering, etc. So what Rely Comply does is it uses machine learning to monitor all the transactions that are happening, to then spot anomalies and to lower the rates of false positives. Also, what you don't want to do as a bank is stop every transaction which you think it could be, because now you're losing money yourself and your customer is getting irritated. So here you have another company that's using machine learning, that's using the cutting edge technology, but ones that they've acquired from globally, from open source technology and others, to apply in South Africa. Now they've gone with that technology globally also. So I think you are seeing very interesting startups in the space solving niche problems. And from there, seeing how they can take that globally and scale.
I'll throw in my own example as well. I hope I don't butcher their name. But there's a startup that's been in the, what's the word? I'm just going to call it almost a prototyping phase. And they've recently started operating. I hope I don't butcher their name. It should be Leroy. So what they've basically done is facial recognition,
mm-hmm.
right? They call it Face ID mm-hmm. for cows. Right. So they've basically come up with a system that's able to read, you know, because usually with cattle farmers, they put the tags on the ears, you know, to say, okay, fine, that's my cattle. And in certain cases, they'll put RFID tags, you know, on the ears, and you can geofence them and you can get alerts when they get out. But now, to take that even a step further, they've come up with a system that's able to do almost a biometric authentication of that is indeed the cow, right? Not by looking at stripes or some pattern. Yeah. You know, let's do, you know, facial recognition. And they call it for cows, but it has an application in their books, you know, across different types of livestock. And I was like, oh, that's really cool, because across the African continent, people are struggling with this thing, right?
Is it my cow or not?
Is it my cow or not? And if your herds mix, or if one of your livestock goes onto someone else's property, all of these things that are like everyday, like common pain points for people, I thought that was, you know, quite an interesting one.
No, definitely. I think there's a lot of very interesting use cases that people are using. I think the large language model side, I think people are trying to apply that for local language services. Mm. I think on the machine learning side, as we spoke about before, there's plenty of companies and startups that are using machine learning, both in fintech, you know, and we've talked about regulatory compliance, talking about agricultural, talking about micro lenders. You know, there's plenty of micro lenders out there that are using data that's sitting on your phone to make a loan decision to you, to try to sell you insurance, etc. So I think we're seeing artificial intelligence and machine learning proliferate in Africa, and definitely in the startup space. And then if you take it one layer above in the enterprise space, where a first round or R&B plays, and we're definitely using it across our internal products, processes, and systems to try to become more efficient and to gain insights from data. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think another big push has come from now, is that everyone is pushing towards being a data first company. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah,
big time, right? Everyone is now saying, but hang on, we've got all this data. We should firstly extract, transform, load it to the correct structure. Where are we going to store this data? Is it on the cloud? Is it on our servers, etc.? Now that we've stored it, like, how do we run the analytics? Do we have enough data scientists to do it? Mm. Right? And then once you have data scientists, do we use a platform from an Amazon or Microsoft to run the analytics? Which database are we using? Is it Snowflake? Is it a MongoDB? And stitching all that together, putting our own data in, that's where enterprises are right now, right? So your question was, how do we invest in it? How do we propagate it? I think we're already doing it, because when we give money to an enterprise, part of that money is taken and immediately reinvested in their own IT systems and own internal CapEx. So it's not, I wouldn't say it's a direct spend, it's an indirect spend.
Yeah.
And that's what we're saying, is every time we fund a data center, the customers are actually enterprises and Microsoft and the hyperscalers, who then use that to provide AI services. Mm-hmm. So yes, we're definitely seeing growth in this space. But, you know, are banks writing specific checks to say, you know, here's X amount to go and build your own ChatGPT competitor? Highly unlikely.
Of course.
Two more things before we let you go, Aaron. First one is, to that point about enterprises, how people are using AI internally, whether it's a Copilot or, you know, other tools that are being used, you know, efficiencies, scraping data, cleaning data, trying to structure it to become useful, etc. Do you think SA, at least on the corporate side of things, because I'm sure that's the interface you're having a lot of the time, do you think corporates have figured themselves out on that front? Because it almost felt as if November 2022, ChatGPT comes in. For 2 months through festive season, people are freaking out. You use 2023 to decide, okay, this is what the technology is. And I think 24 seemed to be the year that some people were now bedding down the use cases to say, okay, fine, the technology is here. This is where we think we can use it. And then you see, to some of the points that you were talking about, how companies will be using it internally. But in South Africa, do you find that we are at that point, at least from a corporate point of view, where there's just broad understanding of, okay, this is the technology, and then each company has reached just a stage where they know this is the technology, this is how we're using it, this is our AI strategy?
I think that would be a big leap, because, you know, I don't think I figure out what the technology is and what we're using for. And I'm saying in a flippant manner, in the sense that every morning you wake up, there's a new technology. Yeah. Perplexity launches deep research, you know, and suddenly you've got Sora from OpenGI, AI, which says that they can make videos. Like, every month there's a new development. How do you possibly keep track of all that? And if you're a CTO or a digital officer of a company, what technology do you back? Are you back in Gemini? Are you back in Microsoft? Are you trying to go an open source and DeepSeek Llama basis? Like, are you using it for chatbots? Are you using machine learning for data you have? There's so many choices that are happening. So I think it's very much on people's agenda. As you can see across South Africa, you've got chief digital officers, data officers, you've got chief information officers that are very focused on it. I wouldn't say that we're at the end of the road. I think we're very much at the beginning of the road,
okay,
right? Yeah. And you have everyone trying to sell you an AI solution. If you think about it, you're sitting there as a CIO, and every day someone comes to you and says, oh, use Amazon Redshift because of A, B, and C, or use Oracle, use this. Yeah. How do you decide to commit, right? And I think a lot of what's happening is, I think people are just getting organized. Yeah. First question is, do we have the right data? Is it stored in the right format?
Yeah.
What's our data strategy? How do I control that, make sure the data is done with the right integrity? Yeah. And then people are slowly, even on the cloud journey, we haven't moved most of our workloads to the cloud yet.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So then we're not even there yet. Are we there with AI solutions? I don't think so, right? So I suppose in summary, I'd say that I think it's very much on the agenda. I think there's very much project teams, people focusing on it. I think there's experiments happening. I don't think we've landed on this is the use case yet, especially one that makes money for the spend.
Of course.
Right? Because it all comes down to profitability at the end of the day, right?
Yeah.
So how do I convince you as the CEO to spend millions on something that I'm not sure is going to make me money yet? Right?
It's a tough decision.
And South Africa, labor's still cheap, right?
Yeah.
Do I employ you as a call center agent, or do I spend hundreds of millions on a chatbot?
Yeah.
I know.
It's a tough one.
It's a tough one, right?
It's a very tough one.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good place for us to end off. Because you used that example of, you know, if you're a CIO or a digital officer, how do you, you know, keep up with the, you know, with the gamut out there. You're a technology lead at RMB. Yeah. How are you keeping up with all of the various developments out there, and what's exciting you in this space?
Yeah, sure. That's an interesting question. So I read widely. So I spend a lot of time on international sites, to, you know, from the Wall Street Journal to The Economist to The Verge or TechCrunch, etc. I also spend a lot of time on podcasts, you know, the Strategies of the World. There are very good podcasts out there that delve very deeply into the realms of technology. There are great YouTube channels, which I watch regularly to understand the nuance of technology. Every morning I wake up, I actually don't know, what is this new technology? I go ask Gemini, I go watch a YouTube video. And then by next month, that's already old technology. So I think it's a never-ending race to be on top of things. But I think what's important is not to get lost in the noise.
Of course.
There'll always be another feature, another new technology. But I think the question always has to be, how is this useful to me and my organization, right? What is the end result of this technology, right? And I think if you don't answer that question, I think you can get lost in the sea of information, right?
So that's how we come to the end of today's discussion. It has been a great one. And I think one of the big overarching themes in trying to understand where we sit when it comes to AI in Africa is that there are certain fundamental things that still need to be done at a continent level when we look at it macro, but on a micro level, if we look at a single enterprise, there are still discussions, debates that companies are still having. It's on the agenda, like what Aaron was saying, but there's still things that need to be done before organizations can fully make use of the AI technology. And on a micro level, there are still big gaps, especially when it comes to connectivity, that still need to be addressed so that we can get this AI into people's hands, at enterprise level, at consumer level. And then over time, there's that step shift that Aaron was talking about, to say that once we've bedded that stuff down, then there will likely be a step shift where you've got ubiquitous connectivity, or at least we hope it will be ubiquitous connectivity at a cheaper rate that increases access. And then over time, some of those more locally based solutions, will be coming out from here. Not to say that there aren't already a lot of solutions using AI. We spoke quite a bit about some of the examples of some of the ways in which, local startups and businesses are trying to use AI, the existing technology, to solve some of the existing gaps, such as translation of local languages, because all you have to do is to look at how language-based features around AI, because all the big, when I look at the smartphone market especially, you look at language-based features, which countries they get released out to first. Whenever they're releasing out these phones, it gives you an idea of what we're talking about. And then, Aaron just also giving us a sense, of where capital is actually flowing. And it's obviously in addressing, those connectivity gaps and making sure that that infrastructure is in place. And for now, he says it's just a better use of our capital in this region, as opposed to trying to compete with companies and organizations that are making use of more than South Africa's GDP, just to invest in this one specific technology called AI. So that's been it. We were talking to Aaron. He is the head of technology, media, and telecoms for RMB, and it has been a great one. Aaron, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.